Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along.
And this is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 199. Yep, right on the eve of, well, not literally, but right on the eve of episode 200, which should be out probably in short order. Had to unplug for a little bit, digitally and electronically from the internet and the computer. Plus the World Cup's been on, and that's really the main two reasons for the delay in getting out the episode 199. Plus, I wanted to plan for episode 200 to be in the summer, like I kind of been saying. You know, in reference to the unplugging a little bit, sometimes you just got to do that. Email, while it's a great thing, when you tend to get lots of stuff that is not related to the podcast, like family emails, emails from friends, people who want to have discussions over email, it's very hard to sit down and go through them all. So what I decided to do is take a little bit of a vacation. So by the time everybody listens to this, they should have gotten my response if you sent me something to the if you sent one to the podcast and you hadn't received anything. I don't think I forgot any. There you have it. Here it is, the week of June 24th, 2014. Thanks for coming along. I appreciate you downloading the show. If you're a new listener, you're right here on the cusp of something great. I've getting ready to go to 200 episodes. I started the podcast back in 2008, and I've just gotten tremendous positive feedback over the years. So I'm going to keep the show going. So if you're a new listener, welcome, and I hope that you come back for episode 200 and 201, 202. Therefore, I usually get a show out every 2 to 3 weeks. That's the goal. Early on in the podcast, in order to get my numbers up, I kind of felt like I had to get one out every week or every 10 days, and I realized I can't do that and put some quality to it. So I've moved it back, and I explained all that about 100 episodes ago, how it was going to just be a kind of a semi-monthly podcast, maybe sometimes one a month, two a month. So with episode 199, obviously there's some stuff, some updates to get everybody updated on. Oh, and also if you're a returning listener, welcome back. I really do appreciate you coming back. I've gotten so much positive feedback from folks. And the email bag section of the show for this episode is big. And what that means is emails always generate new topics to talk about. So the body of the show for the topic, which is going to be called Things I've Learned, that's being kind of short. And then the email bag, of course, will where I engage in conversation with some of the emails that I've gotten about the show. Which is really the highlight of the show, in my opinion, because I always get to hear from people. That will be much longer. But I do want to talk about a few things. My mileage, I'm training for August 2nd 50K in called the Dahlgren Heritage Trail 50K, and that's August 2nd. And obviously, I got to get my mileage up to a point where I can handle 31 miles in this awful heat. Last week in the center of the universe, the temps were upper 90s, and one day it was actually 102 on my car thermometer. I don't even know if that's accurate or not. But, you know, it's a thermometer, and it said it was over 100 degrees, so, you know, that's hot. And I got out there and still got in 30 miles for the week. Had a little problem on the weekend where when I woke up Saturday, or actually I did 5 miles Saturday morning with my Team Incognito group. Maybe get to that later when I get to Kelly's email. And then and that kind of came up a little unexpectedly, so I had planned to do my long run on Sunday. And I woke up Sunday morning, and I had absolutely no motivation to go running. I just didn't feel like running. I did feel like exercising and getting outside with my dog, but I just didn't feel like running. I wasn't sore. We did go out the night before, but I did not stay up late drinking adult beverages or anything like that. It wasn't a situation like that, because I know the difference. Usually the best way to get rid of a hangover is to go out for a 6-mile run. I've always said that, unless it's one of those really, really bad hangovers, like a liquor hangover, which I don't normally get because I prefer the golden stuff. But so what I did Sunday in lieu of running is I went out and power walked 5 miles with my dog, and I was sore for 2 days. Here it is Tuesday as I'm producing the show, the 24th of June, and my back, lower back is still sore. The balls of my feet were kind of sore yesterday. My back was sore yesterday. And this is from a 5-mile power walk, and I took the dog with me and wiped his ass out. And it was humid. And I just decided to change it up a little bit. It only gave me 30 miles for the week. The plan was to do 10 on Sunday to get 35 in, and then drop it back this week to 20 to 25 again, and then go back up next week if I can. So that was a real change. I'm working those walking muscles, which I'm going to need on August 2nd and in November for the 24-hour race, where my goal is to do 50 miles in 12 hours. The first 12 hours of the race is what I hope to do 50 in. See how that all works out. But I really did enjoy the power walk, and I think what the biggest difference was a consistent pace of heavy walking, fast walking, as opposed to when I take the small walk breaks doing the real long runs where it's not as powerful. And I think the way I was walking definitely was going to make it sore. I didn't really realize it at the time. It was really hard. I'm trying to see. I got some other. I actually made some notes for the show. Of course, I've got all the email bag emails out on some printouts here because I'm actually in my car right now. So anyway, let me talk a little bit about some of the things that I've learned. And this is not necessarily all running related, but some of it might be. And the reason I want to share this is just because there seems to be, you know, two categories of people for each of these topics. And each one that I mention is obviously going to be exclusive of the other. So in other words, if I say, you know, all people, you know, people either tend to drive sports cars or not, that doesn't mean that all, you know, people tend to bandit or not also drive green or drive sports cars. You see what I mean? Each one is separate than the other. So hopefully people understand that. But the biggest thing that I really want to say right now is that this whole selfie thing has really gotten ridiculous in our society. And so either you take a selfie or you don't. You know what I'm saying? I don't. I understand why people do. With the job that I have, I tend to review a lot of digital material. And I don't understand why people take pictures of themselves with a toilet in the background or a shower in the background. You know, isn't there another mirror in your house where you can take a picture of yourself other than your, you know, your nasty ass bathroom, you know, with all your shit on the counter? I don't get it. So either you take selfies or you don't. Isn't it just better just to get, hey, you know, get somebody else to take a picture of you? I'll give you an example. I was running the other day, and down Center Street in the town of Ashland is where the railroad tracks run through. It's a double tracks. Beautiful homes along there. It's called Center Street. It's really kind of the main turn of the century homes through the town. And on the other side of the street, I saw a young lady walking. She had a backpack on. She was kind of walking with a purpose. I don't know if she's one of the Randolph-Macon college students, or because I think college was out, or she looked maybe college age. And so she's walking down the street, and usually in Ashland you just wave to people. She didn't wave to me, and then when I walked past her, I kind of looked back, and she was holding her phone up, clearly taking a selfie. And it got me thinking that, you know, what's the point of taking a selfie of yourself walking down the street? Unless I guess you're updating your social media, your profile page. So either you take selfies or you don't. I'm not being critical of people that you do. It might have sounded that way. But I'm just not into that. The next thing, one of the things I've learned, is either you have an American flag flying in front of your house or you don't. And there's really no in between there. I do fly an American flag, and since I fly it at night, I have the porch light on. You're supposed to have a flag. If you fly a flag in the dark, you're supposed to have it lit. A porch light does suffice for that if it lights up the flag. I have a person that I know in my general neighborhood who flies an American flag. They don't have a light on it at night. You know, I'll forgive that part. In fact, matter of fact, where I live, there's three houses in a row that have American flags out front, which is pretty cool. You know, some people just don't, and they fly other flags out in front of their house, which is fine. You know, it's your property. You can do whatever you want. But there are just some houses, if you notice, they always have their flag out. It's not sometimes. It's not every now and then. It's not just on Flag Day or July 4th. It's every day. And so either you fly an American flag every day in front of your house, or you don't. And those are the people that put out, they decorate their house at Flag Day, July 4th and whatnot, Memorial Day, Veterans Day. I put extra flags out in front of my house, you know, like the little dollar ones you get at the drugstore or something. I'll line those up in front of the house, and then I bring them in, you know, so people don't steal them. So that's one thing I've learned. And if you go around where you live, if you live in the U.S. or whatever, you'll probably notice that. Next thing, either you're a piece of shit who litters or you don't. I don't litter. I'm against litter. I've talked about this before in the show if you've listened to the podcast over the years. And, yeah, if you do litter and you're listening to the show, you are a piece of shit. You ought to stop that right away. It doesn't make any sense. I'm talking about intentional litter, not the soda can or beer can that blows out of the back of Bubba's truck when he's going down the road. You know, that's an accident. He should know better than just to leave stuff lying around in there. But at least he threw it there in the first place with the intent of probably throwing it away at some point in time. I'm talking about the intentional whole bag of McDonald's that you just toss out the window when you get to the stop sign. I'm talking about the Miller High Life 40-ounce bottles that don't accidentally fall out the window whatsoever, especially when you find three or four on the vacant lot, you know, up the street from your house. Either you litter or you don't, you know? Either you toss stuff out the windows or you don't. In the county where I live, they have signs at the intersections that say use your ashtray, not the roadway. And, you know, because sometimes you get up to a, I'm not even sure if cars have ashtrays anymore. I'm looking at my car now. I do not have an ashtray, although there's a cigarette lighter outlet, but it doesn't have the cigarette lighter in it because people don't use those anymore. Yeah, either you litter or you don't. And if you do, you're a piece of shit and you need to stop. You need to stop that right away. Next thing I've learned, either you appreciate the military or you take it for granted. I appreciate the military, and in the email bag section of the show, we're going to hear from a colonel in the Army who listens to the show, who's been in for 30 years, and discuss a little bit about what he does with the races that he runs. And, you know, I've noticed that one thing, and I got to be very careful about how I phrase this. You're always hearing people now when they say they're in the military, people are very quick to say, well, thank you for your service. And I need to find out from military. I was not in the military. In hindsight, I wish I had. My dad is an Army veteran. But I need to ask them, do they feel that that phrase is becoming overused? Because when a phrase becomes overused, it starts to lose its meaning. And it just seems like that's the response that most people are supposed to say. I found myself saying it. I've also changed it to saying, well, thank you for serving your country, or thank you for serving the United States. It just seems like it's so quick. You hear it on the news, and it seems like that's the polite thing that you're supposed to say to a veteran. And I'm curious to hear from veterans, what is really the best thing for someone to say to thank you, especially, you know, when we're in war, and then we find out that if you're a combat veteran, obviously people should recognize that and say something to you if they know that. But I always wonder what's the proper thing to say, and maybe some veterans out there can give some input on that. Oh, tattoos. Okay, either you like or have tattoos or you don't. I'm not a tattoo person. I do like looking at them. I think it's interesting to look at when people have significant tattoos or what these call sleeves. Obviously, they have tattoos visible because they want people to look at them. And if you're watching any games in the World Cup, you'll see that most soccer players, I would say most because most do seem to have them. That are visible on their arms and, you know, crawling up their necks and stuff. You know, very interesting. But if you're like me, you just never got into it. And it seems that there are lots more and more. There are a lot more. I don't know how to say this. There are lots more tattoos these days than there have been in the past. It's just a lot more visible. a lot more visible. And I'm going to reserve judgment on what I think about women getting tattoos. You know, ones that just kind of take over their body. Actually, I'm not going to reserve judgment. I just don't personally find that attractive. I know there are people that do. So either you're into tattoos or you're not. There's I don't know if there's any middle ground there. Traffic laws, something else I've learned. Either you ignore traffic laws or you don't. Either you get, you know, tickets for speeding and you drive in a manner where you get stopped by the police, or you drive in a manner where you don't get stopped by the police. There's really no middle of the road there. If somebody gets a ticket, they usually learn from it. There are others that get stopped for speeding or other stuff and they don't learn from it, and they just continue to go down that road. And let me give you an example. My wife recently told me about someone that she knew who got a speeding ticket in a residential area for going 40 and a 25. And that's on a particular street that's not far from where we live. It's also the same street that my daughter uses to ride her bike from our house up to the Hanover Arts and Activities Center for play rehearsal. And this person made a statement about how, well, I was only going 40. Well, I happen to know that there are some police officers out there that won't even get out of the car unless you're going at least 15 miles over the speed limit, because they look at everything else as somewhat minimal. Other guys get out the car at 12, 10 is kind of pushing it, but some guys won't even get out of the car, which means make a stop unless you're going 12 over. Most guys, it's around 15. And that's what this lady was doing. So she just, you know, to her, I guess it seems like the speed limit doesn't apply to her. But, you know, my child uses that road. And so, you know, that kind of, it's a little bit offensive. I guess I'm not going to really go on and on about that. But I guess the main thing to learn from that is either you obey the traffic laws or you don't. And so there's two types of people there. Twitter, okay? I don't tweet or Twitter, but I understand that people do, and when I'm watching stuff on TV, they're constantly reporting on tweets, so I know it's here to stay until something replaces it, or until it gets until it evolves into something else. So either you Twitter or you don't. I don't Twitter, with the exception of several years ago when I ran the Sterling Gym 40 miler. I set up a Twitter account to send out updates to my family, and just by telling them that they could log on, and some, I guess they had to get a profile and they could follow my tweets. Although that didn't seem to work too well, so I haven't pursued that. And I don't carry a wireless device that is hooked into through a cell tower to the internet. So I just don't do it. And also, if you heard me earlier in the show, how I talked about how I had to get unplugged a little bit, I just don't think I can handle that. I don't think my brain can handle the constant changing of information. Hell, I can barely handle email. So it's not a knock to those that tweet, because I think it's kind of interesting. It's just that it doesn't fit my personality for me to be a participant in that. Either you go to art museums or you don't. That's one thing I've noticed. I do go to those. Either you drink alcohol or you don't. And another one here, or it's two more. You get your food through the drive-thru on a regular basis or you don't. Some people eat fast food all the time, and I don't really do that. I think the last time I went through the drive-thru was at Chick-fil-A, and that was probably 3 weeks ago, if that. If I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A, I usually park the car and go inside. I don't know why, I just do, even if I'm going to take it out. But I know people that are always in the drive-thru, and that's how they eat. Last one I wanted to share, which I thought was funny because I just wrote these down over the court when I thought about it. Either you go to 7-Eleven or you don't. If you don't know what 7-Eleven is, most people in America are going to know, but the 7-Eleven is the kind of the convenience store that's on every corner. My wife, I go to 7-Eleven all the time because I buy the stuff that 7-Eleven sells. My wife never goes to 7-Eleven. She doesn't get their coffee. I get coffee a lot of 7-Eleven, also like Wawa. And I buy other stuff that's convenient at 7-Eleven. But my wife never goes to 7-Eleven. There's nothing at 7-Eleven. that she needs, so she doesn't go. So maybe you fall into that category. Let me hit on a few other things before getting into the email bag section of the show. I wanted to talk a little bit about crewing, and I'm thinking about doing an episode in the future on this. Be interested to see if anybody wants to know what that's all about if you're new into ultras. I've done some crewing. I've had people crew for me, and I've read up on it. And there used to be a podcast called Trails and Tribulations that's no longer out that had an excellent episode about crewing. So I learned a lot from that, drop bags. Crewing somebody through an ultra, if you have a chance to do that, is an amazing experience, and it's a great experience. Dr. Smitty, who I'll talk about in one of his emails here in a little bit, he's going to be crewing a friend out at Western States. I think that's next weekend. I'm not sure if I missed it or not. And he helped me through my first 50 miler. He did a great job, so he'll do a great job for his buddy out at Western States. But when you crew somebody through an ultra, you're taking the journey with them, and it's something that you're never going to forget if it's a success. Trust me on that. It really is. And really, in essence, you're doing the same. You're also doing the event, and you at that point you have all the rights and privileges of wearing the shirt if you're able to get one when you crew somebody through an event. And I think I read that somewhere, and I agree with that. And if you do crew somebody, your runner will probably get you some kind of gift that has something to do with the race or some type of souvenir, so you won't forget it. Because, you know, your runner is not going to get through without a good crew if that's the option you choose, if it's a crew or non-crew type of event. So I just want to throw that in there. If you've ever given it any thought, or if you've ever been asked, or if someone ever approaches you about it, jump right in. Go do the event. You're participating in the event as well. You're going to meet lots of cool people, and definitely something that I would recommend. Three last things here. And some of it's just kind of ranting a little bit. Let's talk about the World Cup for a minute. I've got World Cup madness. I'm watching as much soccer as possible. It's my favorite sport. And I particularly like international soccer more than anything else, even the local team we have in the Richmond, Virginia area. I guess because there's usually just so much at stake. I even like watching the international friendlies when they come on TV, and there's so much more soccer on TV. I remember when I was a kid, the only international soccer we could get was on a UHF channel on our black and white TV. Yes, that's right. We had a black and white, and you had to tune it in. You had to hold or put your hand on the TV, and it was all about how it was crazy how you'd have to get the reception. It was called Soccer Made in Germany. It was a one-hour TV show. It had a condensed game of whatever teams. I don't remember the teams, but you watched it, usually German teams. And I think it was Chubby Charles was the commentator, and it was on the UHF, and my brother and my dad and I would watch it because we all liked soccer back then. And then after a while, my uncle that lived in D.C. would start, once we got a VHS player, he would start recording soccer games on the Spanish channel up in Washington, D.C., and he would mail us these VHS tapes. And a lot of times, it was called Univision, the channel. It's still on now, same one. It was SEN. I think they called it SEN. And he would tape these games and mail us the soccer tapes. And sometimes these were international games or other league play around the world. And I would pass those around to my soccer friends after we watched them. And it became a little bit of a cult of the guys who want to get their hands on the soccer tapes, because you could not get games on TV. It was right around the time of the North American Soccer League that ended up folding. Those games were not, it wasn't, there was no cable. It just, it was a lot different. And so I'm totally consumed with the World Cup. I don't watch at work. I record the games on DVR, and I sit home and I watch them. And I've been staying up late. And that kind of segues into my my rant on the sissifying of athletes when it comes to the World Cup. A Brazilian court has ruled that FIFA must allow for a water break during each half of the soccer game. It's 45-minute halves at the 30-minute mark. If the temperature goes over 89.6 degrees, they have to take some kind of water break. And I just think that's nuts, because soccer is an endurance event. I know they're playing in the rainforest in Brazil in some aspects, and the humidity is pretty bad. But you got to keep in mind that most of the teams down there, that's their environment. You have Brazil, Chile, Argentina, Ecuador. A lot of these countries are in South America, and this is the environment they play in. And if you have European teams that come over there and they can't handle that, then you know, that's too bad, right? I mean, that's why you play in different parts of the world, because different teams are going to have strengths. Now, now that being said, I don't understand why you stop a game that has nonstop action for a water break. I mean, it's an endurance event. You know, the people who have the endurance at the end of the game are the ones that are going to make the big play. You know, you don't stop the clock in a marathon because I want to stop and get water. You might stop your watch on a training run, but definitely not during the race. And I just think that's a bad thing, and I didn't like that whatsoever. And then my last rant's going to be... I got two more things. One, there's an iPhone 5 commercial out there that says it's all about the chicken fat. And if you notice that commercial, you'll see that everything about the person's workout is interacting with their device. And I don't know why I keep going on this about devices, but I'm living my life without being connected to a wireless device and checking it all the time. You know, you see people all the time when they're standing around trying to kill time, they're always looking at their device. I sat in the barbershop today, you know, two guys are in there just looking at their device the whole time, and I don't know if they're reading books or what. I guess if you're reading a book, that's fine. But this commercial was really weird, and of course the iPhone wants you to live, you know, they want your life to be all about the device and what the device can do for you. And I just think that's a weird way to live all the time. That's just my opinion, though. You know, I know there are other people that enhances their life, and that's just something that they're used to. And but the problem with that for me is that's not the way our family lives, and we have actually missed out on some social things because they've only been posted on Facebook. And I guess for some people, they just want their Facebook people to show up. I've tried to tell my wife that if somebody really wants us to come over to their house and they want to make sure they don't miss us, then they're going to make sure that we get the message. But, you know, that's changing. And I'm seeing that change right during my lifetime. And it kind of concerns me a little bit because I'm not I don't live on Facebook. So that's some of the stuff I've learned. Episode 199. That's a lot. That's 27 minutes of stuff, and I guess if you're still listening at this point, I didn't piss anybody off, we'll get into the email bag section of the show. All right, heard from Steve Buoni. He runs right here in the center of the universe, and we are going to carpool up to the April 2nd 50K together. He was up there last year. Just kind of walking around a little bit, checking it out, and he's going to do it this year. He's finally made it down the trolley line trail here in Ashland. He sent me an email about that, and said he tries to avoid the high-speed country roads with no sidewalks, especially after Meg Menzies. And really, that's all you got to say around here is Meg Menzies, you know, local runner. So, yeah, Steve, we'll hook up for the race. Heard from Snuggy Bear. He sent me a link to the roughest, toughest race in the world, which is the Barkley Marathon. He said he'd be happy to crew for me if I wanted to do it. Yeah, John, that's kind of funny that you sent that. I'll check out that video link that you sent. That's an invitation-only race, and it's done by Gary Cantrell, who is very unique. And I think we had an email exchange about this, but you'll remember... He was at the Race Under the Stars or Running Under the Stars race that you did 4 years ago in Paducah, Kentucky. The reason I know that was 4 years ago is because we were listening to one of the World Cup matches on the radio coming back, and that's when my feet were all bandaged up after doing my 50 mile or so. Yeah, good memory on that. Thanks for sending the email, and John, I think I got another one in here for you. Heard from Don Murphy. He's out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And turns out he went to Southern Miss, University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg, which is where my cousin John Pendergrass lives and practices ophthalmology, the triathlete. I did a show about him a couple, many shows back. He's done a triathlon on every continent. except for he didn't finish the one in China, but he's, I guess, started one on each, and he's in his, and he did it all after 60, so age 60. Can't remember the name of his book. He wrote a book, and he did a talk, and I put that out on the podcast. But Don says he's been listening to for a few years. I really liked the family reunion episode where the cousin spoke about the adventures. Don puts you on the list. Appreciate that very much. Sorry it took me so long to get back to you. Like I said, I had to unplug for a little bit. Also heard from Chantel Corbett, and she is out of the Florida area. Don't know exactly where, but she lives not too far from Cocoa, Florida, because she's going to be doing her first marathon this November, the Space Coast Marathon in Florida near the Space Center. And she says she heard about this podcast from the Running with the Pack podcast, which is no longer podcasting. That's the one that I think Alan, the guy named Alan, did out of University or Penn State College Station up there. The reason I don't listen to that one anymore is because I kind of got back to listening to music and just news shows. I'm kind of a politics junkie when it comes to that kind of stuff. I try to keep the politics out of the podcast, but sometimes the politics go into the podcast, or the podcast gets into the politics. I'm not really sure. But October of last year, Chantel did the Susan G. Komen 3-day event, which was 20 miles each day for 3 days in a row, and that gave her the mental strength to start running. She's done some 5Ks, an 8K, and a 10K, and two half marathons. And congratulations on pulling the trigger for your first full marathon, Chantel. You won't regret that at all, and you might regret training through the summer, but you won't regret crossing the finish line and making that commitment. And I've always said that the hardest thing when you're doing your first marathon is not the training, but it was actually registering for the race, and then the horror of knowing that the rest of your life, maybe not the horror, but the thought that knowing the rest of your life will start after marathon day, because you really can't think past marathon day once you start sign up for your first one. So I appreciate it very much. I put you on the list for the stand up and be counted. Another one from Snuggy Bear. We're emailing about the, he's actually crew for me for the 24-hour race. So I'm looking forward to that, John. Appreciate it. Heard from Max Stinson. Max Stilson. He hails out of, looks like, Washington, White Salmon, Washington State area. And he liked the Bandit podcast a lot. He's pretty much opposed to Bandits. And then he mentioned about a half marathon that he did earlier in June, or mid-June, called the Backyard Half in near his house, White Salmon, Washington. He said it's only $12. It's about an hour drive. So he lives about an hour from this place. It was only $12. It's about an hour, just an hour drive. It benefits the local cross-country team. But here's the kicker. It climbs 2,000 feet up and then goes down Dog Mountain, so it should be a lot of fun. And, I hope you had fun with that, Mac, because that'd be a quad killer on the way down, no doubt. But I love the name of that, Backyard Half. That's really cool. So I'll put you down on the list. No doubt about that, and I appreciate you standing up and being counted. Heard from Colonel Jeff Hager out of Alabama, and this is the military officer I was talking about earlier in the show. He ran the Backyards Ultra 50K in Iowa in late May, finished in 4:57, which is awesome. And he's doing, he's done a total of 56 marathons and ultras. The longest he's done is a 100 miler. And he did the Hatfield McCoy here in mid-June. He says he's starting in West Virginia, run through Kentucky, return to West Virginia. And that's a pretty cool one. And Jeff, I think I put this in an email to you, but I actually did a podcast about my experience with that 4 years ago as a spectator. Again, it was the same trip where we went to Kentucky, and my friend Snuggy Bear and Crash Kreider did a marathon. They ran a marathon and finished at 12, and then we drove 8 hours and they ran a 50K during an overnight race, and both of them got maniac status from that. It was a crazy trip. I was on crutches. I couldn't miss this trip for even if I was hurt from my own race earlier in the week, in the month. And man, that was 4 years ago. But anyway, thanks for your service to our country, Jeff. Appreciate the email. And if you get a chance, email me back and give me some feedback on what the proper thing and respectful thing is to say to a military veteran without it being cute, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's something that Americans should say, you know, the thing that non-military should say to military that makes it sincere and it doesn't get overused. And because I hate to ignore it, but at the same time, I need some feedback from somebody who's in the military. I mean, with your 30 years in the Army, and especially you're an Apache helicopter pilot, I'm sure you've probably seen some stuff. So, says, well, thanks, Dave. Your podcast is my favorite out of the four I listen to. It's, well, Jeff, I'm curious to know which other ones have the honor. So, good to hear from you. I'll put you on the list. Heard from Mark Glendinning. Let me turn the page here. Mark has written in before. He's, gosh, where is he from? Used to live in London. Now he's in San Francisco. And this is the funny part, is that Mark actually says he, when he was briefly based on the East Coast, he actually stopped in Ashland for gas when he was headed down I-95. He said he told his wife that they were in the center of the universe, and she had no idea what he was talking about. Mark says that he's been listening to everything, maybe started at episode 9. So, yeah, that would put it around early 2009, Mark, maybe late 2008. I can't really remember. I really do appreciate hearing from you. Mark said that before I get into... I have one comment about stopping for gas in Ashland, but let me get to... He said in his email, he said he had a funny semi-bandit experience. He says he runs a lot in the Marin Headlands area just north of San Francisco. One weekend, he happened to be out on the trails at the same time as the North Face Endurance Challenge. He realized he was approaching one of the aid stations. So to keep out of the way, he took a small cutoff on the trail. And then one of the aid station guys thought he was in the race and had taken a wrong turn, so he shouted out to him, and he says, hey, I'm not registered. He said, I'm not just out training. He's like, oh, that's cool. If you need any fluids or something to eat, you're welcome to stop by anyway. Mark said he didn't do it. He just didn't feel like good trail karma, plus he was carrying everything he needed. But he thought it was nice of them to make themselves available, even though he wasn't a registered racer. He said, it's the first time I've ever heard of an event actually inviting someone to bandit their aid station. That's really pretty funny, Mark. I mean, that's a total ultra mentality, even though that's a corporate race, you know, the North Face Endurance Challenge. People running those aid stations are probably just ultra runners, you know, out there working it. And I think you did the right thing. I think the right thing might have been to accept the invitation, but if you didn't want to mess up your trail karma, then you definitely got to go with that, and I agree with that. I want to just comment on one thing you said about stopping in Ashland for gas. Ashland is at exit 92 on Interstate 95, which runs from Maine to Florida. And so that means it's, I guess it's 92 miles from the North Carolina-Virginia border, because the numbers get higher as you go north. And if you stop in Ashland to get gas and you don't go farther than a half mile off the interstate, it is a total armpit. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's just nasty. You got Burger King, Wendy's, you know, there's a truck stop there. You've got, you know, the hotels from Motel 6 all the way up to Hampton Inn. I guess Hampton Inn wouldn't really be an armpit. You know, Holiday Inn Express, there's a Cracker Barrel. It's all the stuff you see at an interstate stop. You know, it's any town USA. However, if you continue 1 mile to the west on the other side of Route 1, is where you have Center Street and the railroad tracks and the historic town of Ashland, which is what I mentioned earlier in the show. And that is the heart of the center of the universe, is that small town atmosphere away from I-95. And it's this way in all towns, all small towns in the U.S., is that sometimes you got to get away from the trap to get to the heart of the area. So, next time you're this way, Mark, hopefully you'll venture a little bit farther. And I'm not criticizing you by any means. I'm just telling people that if they happen to be going down I-95 and you need gas and you listen to the podcast, and don't stop at the Shell station. Head out a little farther north. I mean, a little farther to the west, cross Route 1. And when you get to the railroad tracks, look left and right, and you'll see the Ashland train station, you'll see Randolph-Macon College, and you'll see why we love Ashland so much here. We call ourselves Ashland Americans. So, Mark, thanks for listening to the show, and I'm glad that you're still with me all through the years here. Heard from Tom Mueller from Master Competitor blog, and he thought it was an excellent show on Bandits. He made a confession in his email that I'm not gonna repeat, but about banditing. But he says that he understands it's the insurance and litigation issues, and agrees that signing the liability waiver as part of the event entry is one barrier for race organizers to fight rogue lawsuits. And I agree with that. I still have a hard time believing how somebody could even get a settlement if they weren't supposed to be in the race. I mean, if the organizers weren't showing any negligence, I don't know. It's just one of those things that makes you wonder a little bit. But thanks for checking in, Tom. It's always good to hear from you, and I'm glad that you made it back stateside. One other from Tom. Thomas, he said he was listening to my latest podcast when he was walking across campus where he works, and thought my joke about excessive chafing was pretty funny. He said I might be the ultra stand-up comic. Please add more jokes to future podcasts. I will try. I know sometimes my humor is a little dry. Maybe I should put some laughter in the background, you know, on a soundtrack, so people will know that that's supposed to be funny. I'll check out your race report, Thomas. Appreciate you including that for the Oak Mountain 50K that you recently did. I heard from Kelly. Kelly's part of the Team Incognito training team. It was a grassroots training team back in 2006 that several of us joined together after doing a half marathon training group and became friends, and we decided to continue on with our training and fellowship. And Kelly was one of those members, and surprised me recently when I got an email from her telling me that she's catching up on some back episodes after a little break, and she didn't know about Rodney's heart attack, so I filled her in with that. And I'm just glad to hear that Kelly, you still listen. I'm glad that you do. And on a side note, we Kelly and John King and I, who else? Me, Kelly, John, and Julie, who's a kind of an ad hoc member of the Team Incognito team. She was on our Colonial 200 team. We actually met last weekend and had a group run and went for coffee afterwards, and it was just really nice to catch up. And I'm glad to see Kelly back to running, and I'm sure we'll see her at some other events. So good to hear from you, Kelly, and better yet, good to see you guys, see you and the others over the weekend. Heard from, and I'll put you on the list there for standing up and being counted. I'll put you on the list. Heard from Sandy. She has had a very busy race season. I was looking at her email. She was doing a 24-hour run, but I can't remember what the name of it was. But she had a new headlamp. It's the Petzl Nao, PETZLNAO. She says it was awesome, worth every penny. She got a ton of comments from other runners that they had never seen a lamp that bright. And I think I've got like a diamond. It's called, I can't remember the brand of it. It's a diamond something that is very bright. And I'll have to, I wonder if it's the same brand. Mine was, I think, $80. But when you said worth every penny, Sandy, I'm guessing it was probably at least $100. But yeah, if you're going to be doing those night runs, you're going to need something that's reliable. Sandy did make a trip to Virginia. I was not able to hook up with her and Eric. It was just a scheduling issue, and but looks like they'll be back in October, and we'll maybe hook up then. That would be nice. Sandy, for those who don't remember my relationship with Sandy, I've met Sandy through the podcast, and we actually ran the Blue Ridge Marathon together almost stride for stride April of last year, and that goes down as one of my best ever experiences on a marathon course. Not only was the course gorgeous, but you know, meeting Sandy for the first time and running with her and getting to know her better was a lot of fun. And that was the first time I consumed grapes during a marathon, which is something I need to remember for my next ultra. She also loved the episode about Bandit, so great to hear from you, Sandy. Thanks for checking in. Heard from Dr. Smitty, and he's getting ready for Western States as a crew member. I don't know how much he's going to be running, but it sounds like it's going to be a lot. My guess is sounds like he might be running the second part of the course. I'm not sure when you can pick up a pacer. He says he ran 233 miles in May, which is the first time he's crossed the 200-mile mark for a month. He did multiple weekends with 20-milers, double digits back-to-back. He did a 28-miler, a 20-miler at night. Plus, he ran a Seashore Nature Trail 50K, which is a race in December, but he ran that just for the fun of it. He's going to be doing the Patrick Henry Half Marathon the week before Labor Day, so we'll hook up in Ashland then. Yeah, Greg, good to hear from you. And sounds like you've got some life changes at home there with your son getting ready to start driving. Hopefully everything works out well with that. And you're welcome for the hospitality at the railroad run, as always. This year I'm going to have a little different schedule for the PH. I'll be headed up to Annapolis. We'll get something to eat after the race, and then I got to go home and shower and get on the road because my buddy up in Annapolis has a boat, and we'll be going out on the boat that afternoon and evening, and then we'll do the Annapolis 10-miler the following morning. I think I might be staying over that Sunday night. It'd be good. I'm looking forward to seeing you, and I can't wait to hear all about the Western States, your crewing out there. Maybe we can set up an interview where you can just kind of tell me how it was, and I just really hope that goes well. I hope everything works perfect for that. And I really do wish you the best. And thanks for checking in on the email. I heard from Tim on Signal Mountain. And got to put him on the list. I think I've already got him on there, actually. He agrees with the view on Bandits. Signal Mountain, Tennessee. He made an interesting comment here, which I thought was interesting. He says the impact on other runners in most cases is minimal when it comes to Bandits, and you're absolutely right. It doesn't really impact the other runners. It's when there's a problem, and then that person wants to sue. He says he's noticed a new type of Bandit over the last several years. Registered runners who join the race after the start. He thinks these types of runners are worse than Bandits, because they get race times that aren't right. The Peachtree Road Race has had to extend the spectator fencing almost a half mile down from the start. I think that's the one in Atlanta. And Monument Avenue 10K is similar to that. I heard something last weekend that I thought was interesting, was people cheating. I can't remember who I was talking. Oh, it was our Team Incognito group. Apparently, there was a set of porta-johns where people would go in the porta-john, and then sometimes they would go out the other side and continue and cut off, because the race is an out and back on a median, Monument Avenue, which is a huge street in the city of Richmond, you know, thereby cutting off a good chunk of the race course. And I guess if you miss a timing mat, I guess the only way to combat that is to have multiple timing mats. But, you know, you can only have so many timing mats out on a race course. So, Tim, I appreciate that perspective. I think that is very, very interesting. And thanks for the advice on the Adidas sequence and glides. For those that are wondering about that, that's a type of shoe. Tim gets about 450 miles per pair of the Adidas sequence, and he's on his 27th pair of Adidas shoes since 2003. So maybe I need to look at that, although I really do like the Ultras that I'm running in. I heard from Todd Miller, and he's out of Western Loudoun County, Virginia. And he's checking in for the Stand Up and Be Counted, and he says, we'll meet up sometime at a race. I'm sure we will. And he said for show 250, he said, let's do a real run with everyone who can attend and for all levels. You've inspired so many to get the ass off the couch. Let's celebrate that. And he's been listening for about 4 years, and he thinks he's heard about every episode. I really appreciate that, Todd. And you know, it's not a bad idea. I just don't know where to do it. I don't know if it would be something in Richmond or something in Central Virginia or more Northern Central Virginia. I don't know, but it's definitely something I'll think about. And it would be pretty cool because you'd probably get a handful of people. So thanks for checking in. I really do appreciate it. I heard from Keith. And Keith's out of Georgetown, Texas. I had some really good advice about the zero drop shoes. He says, I'm sure you're well aware, from switching from a shoe with normal drop, 12 to 14 millimeters, to zero drop, ultra puts you at risk for Achilles tendonitis for obvious reasons. And he says his current favorite is a Salomon Sense Pro. It's about a 6 millimeter drop, enough for a midfoot strike, but no Achilles problem. And self-described shoe freak several years, continuing to buy way too many, and did work in a shoe store for a couple of years. So Yeah, and he says, love the show and agree that part of the allure is I don't have to listen to guys who run 14-hour 100s. Keith, that's probably the best part of your email. I really do appreciate you saying that. Yeah, you won't get that here. You're going to definitely get a humble, middle-of-the-pack, ordinary nobody perspective on running. And I do appreciate your input on the shoes. I have not noticed any issues in my Achilles, but I have gotten a little bit of arch pain in my left foot. And I don't know if that's from the power walking I did the other day, which, believe it or not, was in an old pair of Asics. It was not in, you know what, that's interesting. It was in a old pair of Asics. It was not in my the shoes that I run in. I'm not even sure why I did that, because I think it's what it was. I started off walking the dog and then decided to do the power walking. I'm definitely, after your email, I'm definitely noticing, we'll be looking for any changes. And I appreciate the input. I really do, especially because you got a lot of experience with it. So I'll put you on the list. On the list for Stand Up and Be Counted. Heard from Alex. This is an old email from May, which I just was not able to get to. And Alex, as you know, I sent you an email saying how I had to unplug for a while. Alex said he really liked the show with when I talked with Thomas Mueller. Very inspiring. And he plans to check out his book. And he says that the podcast is really for the mass majority of runners, the people that are just looking to finish, the runners still trying to dial in their diet, you know, not the elites. Alex said that he's really been reflecting a lot on his life lately after the interview, and he said just the other day he was reading some comments people were making on the question of runners with kids, and the question was, do you feel guilty for spending too much time running? And his response was that sometimes that he does. He doesn't, you know, he won't be happy or satisfied unless he does that hobby, and it's kind of a release from everyday life. And maybe that makes you better for your kids if you feel like you've engaged in your hobby. He says that after the interview, he felt like he didn't fully answer the questions. This is Alex, who did a 100-mile race a little while back, and I did an interview. You can go to ashlanddave.podbean.com and check this. But so he wanted to add a couple things. He said, in the Phoenix area and surrounding cities, the winter season is November through January, but most days in the highs are in the mid-60s. This past winter, he never took out a heavy jacket, just a light sweater, a windbreaker. He says, from Phoenix, you can drive 1.5 hours north and be out into the desert and into the forest where the temps are much cooler. So that sounds pretty cool. I guess you can't. In Phoenix, you can't, there's nowhere to drive to the ocean there. So anyway, that was Alex. Thanks for checking in, Alex. I'll, maybe we could talk again. Not really sure, when we could do that, but, I'd like to talk to you again for certainly. And last email, but not least, because I've got an audio message to add on. This is from Jim Smith out of Red Bluff, California. Hey, Dave, I was just listening to your last podcast and mentioned about writing an email to podcasters, but always forgetting to do so, so now I'm doing it. I've been a regular listener for a long time, sometime in 2008, but I haven't written since 2011, still like listening to the show. Really appreciate your perspective on running from a real middle-of-the-pack runner who's also on the heavy side, since that matches my situation. I even like your occasional rant about this or that. As for my running, I had to cut way back due to degenerative arthritis in my hips. I'm 62 years old. I'm down to one run a week, 5 to 7 miles, but I'm trying to keep up my one race a month, 15-year streak. I used to do marathons and half marathons for the streak, but now it's 5Ks. I still love running, and lately I'm feeling better, so maybe I'll push the envelope and do 2 runs a week. Keep up the podcast. Jim, I think I do remember hearing from you. And that is amazing that you've been doing one race a month for 15 years. That is definitely something to admire. And I appreciate you staying with the show. I do get that a lot, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn here or anything, but I'm hardly anybody that thinks I'm great at anything. And, I never win anything. I've never won anything. I just want to participate and have fun. And I think that reflects in the podcast. And I know sometimes I kind of go off on this or that, and I might put people into a category, but after all, I am human. I have learned a thing or two on my 45 years on Earth. And if people are willing to listen, then I'm willing to talk about it. And that's kind of the deal with the podcast. One last thing, or two, I got Ashlyn Bryan, my running partner. He told me the other day we were watching one of the World Cup games. He said he wanted to check in and stand up and be counted. So, Brian from Ashland, Virginia, you're on the list. And then I've got a voicemail from Liam. If you want to go, if you can do this also, you can go to ashlanddave.podbean.com, scroll down, go over to the right side, and hit on the voicemail message, and you can record right into your computer a voicemail message to me, which I'll put into the show. And if you're worried about it being posted anywhere, it just gets buried in a podcast, and there's no tag put on it, so nobody other than people who listen to the show will ever hear it. So if you want to give me a verbal message, you can do that. Somebody clued me into that. I think it was Scott Johnson over at the Computer Tutor podcast. He told me about that, and I decided to try it, and I added it to my podcast website. So that's at ashlanddave.podbean.com. So let's listen to his message.
Hello, my name's Liam, and I'm from the Next Level podcast. You mentioned us on a recent show, and we recently spoke about you mentioning us. So I just want to say that we've mentioned you on our show as well. Thank you very much for that. Congratulations on your 200th show, which I believe is due out very soon. Thank you, and goodbye.
Well, thank you, Liam, very much. I appreciate you doing that. And again, if you want to send me an audio message, you can do that at ashlanddave.podbean.com. You can send an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com. You can check out all the podcasts at ashlanddave.podbean.com. Or on iTunes, just search for Ashland Dave or Running in the Center of the Universe. And if you want to get way back episodes, you have to contact me by email, and I can burn those to a CD and send them out to you. I've actually had a few listeners request that, which I've accommodated, and I appreciate that very much. All right, that's it for episode 199, anniversary episode number 200. Will be coming up soon, hopefully in short order. I'd like to thank you for listening for the last 199 episodes. For those of you who have stuck with me over the years, it's been a lot of fun, and we will do the Stand Up and Be Counted episode coming up with number 200. If you want to get in at the very late hour, you can send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com. And Stand Up and Be Counted, you can send me your name, where you hail from, and what you do, as in you're running, and I will put you on the list. We had a great response from that, and we'll have some fun with that in the next episode. So this is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, don't forget doggy kids, and y'all have a good week.